Yeah.
Okay. All right, so this is January 6th. I'm Kevin Grosso, and we're doing the Narkis Bible study on the parasha, the triennial parasha. So this morning we're looking at Leviticus 21, 1 through Leviticus 22, 16. And then also Ezekiel 44, 25 through the end of the chapter. So I thought we could start out by just reading the whole thing, and then we'll come back and look at some things after. So I'll let you guys get situated. Maybe we can just go around the room and read. You can just read, like, the section. So, like, verse 1, 21, 1 through 9, and then the next person can read 10 through 15, 16 through the end. So, go ahead whenever you're ready.
Adonai said to Moses, "Speak to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, a Kohen is not allowed himself to become unclean for the dead among his people, except for his relatives that are nearest to him, his mother, his father, his son, his daughter, his brother, or his virgin sister who is near to him, who has no husband. For her, he may allow himself to become unclean, but he's not to defile himself, a husband among his people, and so profane himself. Kohanim are not to shave their heads, nor shave off the corners of their beards, nor make any cuttings in their flesh. They're to be holy to their God, and not profane the name of their God, for they present the offering of Adonai made by fire, the bread of their God. Therefore, they are to be holy. They are not to marry women who are defiled as prostitutes or profane. Neither shall they marry women divorced from their husbands, for a Kohen is holy to his God. Therefore, you are to sanctify him, because he offers the bread of your God. He shall be holy to you, for I, Adonai, who sanctifies you, am holy."
Why don't you read the next verse as well?
"The daughter of any Kohen, if she profanes herself by playing the prostitute, profanes her father, she's to be burned with fire." Wow.
So 10 through 15?
"The priest who is exalted above his fellows, and who has had the anointing oil has been poured, and who has been consecrated to wear the vestments, shall not dishevel his hair nor tear his vestments. He shall not go where there is a dead body. He shall not defile himself even for his father and mother. He shall not go outside the sanctuary, shall marry only a woman who is a virgin, a widow or a divorced woman, or a woman who has been defiled, a prostitute. These he shall not marry. He shall marry a virgin of his own kin, that he may not profane his offspring among his kin. For I am the Lord, I sanctify him."
16 through the end. Okay, and 22, 1 through 9? Yeah, we're going all the way through 16.
Those things which they hallow
So all the way through
what,
9.
Okay. What man soweth of the seed of Aaron is a leper or path of running issue, he shall not eat of the holy things until he be clean. And who toucheth anything that is unclean by the dead, or man whose seed goeth from him, or who hath toucheth any creeping thing, whereby he may be made unclean, or a man of whom he may take uncleanness, whatsoever uncleanness he hath. The soul which hath touched any such shall be unclean until evening, and shall not eat of the holy things unless he wash his flesh with water. And when the sun is down, he shall be clean, and shall afterward eat of the holy things, because it is his food. That which dieth of itself, or is torn to pieces, he shall not eat to defile himself therewith, saying the word. They shall therefore keep my ordinance, lest they bear sin for it, and die thereof. If they profane it, I will be sanctified.
And then 10 through 16.
What's so amazing is their version and that version of the crushed testicles and, you know, the flat nose. And anyway.
Well, what does it say there?
A man 16. Is broken-footed, or crook-backed, or a dwarf, or has a blemish in his eye, or a scurvy, or staff, or has his, I don't know,
stone broken.
A lay person shall not eat of a holy thing. No foreign guest, if a priest or a hired worker, shall eat of a holy thing. But if a priest buys a slave as his property for money, the slave may eat it. And anyone born in his house may eat of his food. If a priest's daughter marries a layman, she shall not eat of the contribution of the holy things. But if a priest's daughter is widowed or divorced and has no child and returns to her father's house as in her youth, she may eat of her father's food, yet no lay person shall eat of it. If anyone eats of a holy thing unintentionally, he shall add to the fifth of its value to it and give the holy thing to the priest. They shall not profane the holy things of the people of Israel, which they contribute to the Lord, and so cause them to bear iniquity and guilt by eating their holy things. For I am the Lord who sanctifies them.
All right. So I wanted to start off by looking at verse 6 of chapter 21. And if you have a Hebrew Bible, it would be best if you looked at it in Hebrew, and you can read Hebrew. For those of you Hebrew readers, speakers out there, is there anything weird about verse 6? This is kind of going to be what we an introduction to what we talk about this morning.
Can you read it to us in Hebrew?
Yep. Kroshim yiyu le'elohehem. ולא יחללו שם אלוהיהם, כי את אישי אדוני לחם אלוהיהם הם מקריבים, והיו קודש. Right, so this is really, especially, okay, if you look at, you know, the beginning of verse 6, it says, קודשים יהיו לאלוהיהם. Right, so the difference between kodoshim and kodesh is one is an adjective and one is a noun. So I actually looked in every ancient translation I know.
It's like literally saying, like, and they shall be holiness.
Correct, that is actually what it's saying. Or it's saying they shall be a holy thing, which you can't do in English. Well, you actually, in verse 10, right, this is how the translation was that Halva read. In verse 10, Bechol zar lo yochal kodesh. You shall not eat a holy thing, right? Something that's holy. So,
but for people who call that? That
right, but that's, right. So this is, it's bizarre a little bit.
In verse 10, say it again.
22:10. Yeah, yeah. So, I bring this up because, so I checked every ancient translation I know, and none of them have a noun here. They all have an adjective. Septuagint, all the Targums, the Samaritan Pentateuch, all of them have, the equivalent of Kedoshim.
So they assume that, like, the theme just fell off.
Right, something like that. Or they had a different text. I mean, right. Or they thought it didn't make sense. I mean, it's really impossible to know. I bring it up because I think... I really don't know if this is actually the best text, right? To say that, it should be, and they will be holiness, or they should be holiness, something like that. But I do think it's helpful to think about this text in that way. To say the priests help us to understand the concept of holiness better, right? So that would be kind of the idea. If you say it's, we won't get into the difference between nouns and adjectives this early in the morning, but, the difference would be they're helping to define the concept of holiness rather than holiness is attributed to them.
Is this 21 or 22:6?
21:6.
You mean the same way that they call, like, the holy bread Kodesh, like they're going to eat, or consecrated food? It's like also these people themselves become, like, this thing.
Right.
Holiness.
Right. So that would be... Right, so that would be the reading under this text, something like that.
It feels, I don't know, it comes across slightly stronger when you say it this way.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it's a dominant attribute. They are this.
Yeah. So, right, so I bring that up to say that's kind of how we're going to look at the text. We're going to see, okay, what can these regulations about the priests actually teach us about holiness in general as a concept, right? So let's go back and look at 1-9 again. So I'll just read it again in small chunks and ask for your input as we go through. So just to give it a little bit of an overview before we start, it's broken up. I broke this up into 5 sections. So 1-9, this first section, is about restrictions on who priests can bury and who they can marry. 10-15 is about the high priest, who they can bury, who they can marry. 16-24 is physical impediments that disallow service for the priest. And then 22-9 is impediments to eating priestly food. And then 10-16 discusses the relatives and how they can or cannot eat priestly food. So this first section, 1-9, again, restrictions on who they can bury, who they can marry. So we'll start, I'll just read 1-4 again, and we'll open up if anyone has any thoughts. So, and the Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the priests and the sons of Aaron, and say to them, no one shall make himself unclean for the dead among his people, except for his closest relatives, his mother, his father, his son, his daughter, his brother, or his virgin sister, who is near to him because she has had no husband. For her he may make himself unclean. He shall not make himself unclean as a husband among his people and so profane himself." All right, anyone have any thoughts about these 4 verses?
Not,
The net footnote says relatives by marriage. Husband would be including relatives by marriage, not blood relatives. But then, yeah, where's your wife? She is a relative by marriage, then, so it's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Why you couldn't
be there? Yeah. Well, you couldn't physically bury.
Well, you have to interpret what it means
to be there.
To be a husband.
Yeah, except that the two are one flesh or something like that.
No, so. Right.
And wouldn't she have to be from a priest family as well? So.
I have problems on the whole concept that burying somebody, or indeed marrying somebody, is a physical thing that you do. And yet the unclean concept is presumably ceremonially unclean. And I don't get the connection. Why? I don't understand why. I think that's my question.
Can you try to ask the question? So are you asking, what is the difference?
I think I'm still struggling with the concept of clean and unclean. I have less... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It makes you unclean to bury somebody in your family. And anybody now who is a Kohen is not allowed to go near and be part of a burial. They stand outside. And it's interesting, and it says so that you can bury your wife. Isn't that what we've just said? You can bury your wife, but basically nobody else. Is that what it says?
No, his nearest kin.
Right.
Oh, his nearest kin.
Mother, father, son, daughter, brother, or sister, virgin.
What happens in modern Judaism is that the Kohen, anybody who considers themselves a Kohen or a Levite or whatever, is not allowed to go near the burial place. They stand apart.
So I think...
And I'm simply saying why. What is this concept of unclean that you can't do it?
What's unclean about death, you mean?
Everything. But if death is unclean per se, then none of us can do anything.
Of course.
I'm struggling with something very basic which we've been talking about for the last 6 months. I mean.
Okay, well, let me ask a question. For you, does unclean have a connection to sin and morality?
I don't think so. I don't think it does have a connection.
So then what's the problem? I mean, unclean things connected to mortality are unclean by definition.
Right.
So if the priest is supposed to represent life and fullness of life, that is God, that is other than mortality,
right,
then they need to be separate from everything connected to mortality.
Okay.
And not just fullness, also wholeness, and that's why you have the later portion of the kinds of crushed ones.
Right. I think the concept, I've been thinking about this a lot in the past few days. I think a lot of it has to do, like, what would fall under how God created things to be. So, like, he didn't create humans to die originally, right? He didn't create humans to have deformities originally, right? So anything that would be, you know, post-fall in... that would come like in creation after the fall could be unclean in that sense.
Yeah.
Right? So the priests represent this this kind of like not perfection of humanity, but it like humanity the
original
way that
intent.
It's right, exactly. The way that it was originally created or designed to be.
The wholeness or fullness of the design.
Right. Exactly.
Or just, sin is just one aspect of it. Like that's not the only thing that's included in the.
No, what I'm saying is if you go back to the creation, post fall, the fall was a result of sin. So it's like So we don't look at it as morality now, like, you know, daring something like a moral issue, but background.
Burial is not, but sin is one of those things of the lack of wholeness, lack of being complete, and all those. Like,
it's the cause of the sin.
Right. If sin had not entered, we would have no burials.
Right.
So it's just an indirect relationship to right.
It gets kind of crazy though. You kind of have to have two categories of sin, really.
You just keep reminding yourself that like that Cohen is not at the funeral not because the person who died is sinful.
Right, of course.
We're not talking about moral wrongness.
Yeah.
The uncleanness that is keeping him has nothing to do with.
You know, I think it reminds me of the obligations of, if you know, what are the name? Lucha. Royalty. A family royalty. They have certain obligations as a royal person. They can't just do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the priests are like that. They're born into this category of people that have a to represent. And everything they do, there's a rule for it to be part of this unique role.
Right.
So it's very much like the monarchy where you have to be trained in what a queen or king can do or a prince or a princess and it's not your own choice, you know? You're not allowed to go to the burial of your wife. That seems harsh, but it's all part of this.
It's a bit like the queen now having decided that she can't go to Prince Harry's wedding. Because
right.
He's marrying a
exactly. It's exactly like that.
Didn't go to Prince Charles' wedding.
It's exactly like that. Yeah. I was thinking about just in many ways, a lot of us have roles like that. Not thinking that we're calling down wife. So I don't even really think about by virtue of being a wife, for example, that has certain limitations and responsibilities, expectations, etc. That therefore my life is not my own in a certain sense. My duty now to be a wife or be a mother or be a whatever. That, you know, even a student, you take on that role, like you may seem minor. It's very
everything is a role, right? You're a daughter or a
son
of a certain family, you represent that family. So there's all kinds of things that oblige you to behave a certain way.
And it's very interesting, isn't it, that in modern society where because of a rejection, basically, of scripture on a very big level, the idea of a role is considered shocking. But in many societies, people would say, listen, I'm a mother and it's my job to take care of the kids, it's my job to be a wife to my husband or whatever that means, etc. That's not very feminist, just we're all supposed to be exactly the same.
And
there's no
different
one. We do what we want, there's no difference in the sexes, there's no responsibility.
No, we all have to be same. If we equal, that's different. Because a husband also has to say, I'm a husband.
That's
I
right.
have to be a husband,
that's
I have
right.
to be a father,
yeah.
I have to be...
But what I'm saying is, in modern society, the idea that he's got to be a husband, and he's got to be responsible, and he's got to take care of his family, or whatever one's ideas are about being a husband, or being a father, or being the breadwinner of the family, or whatever the words are you want, people have thrown it out and say we all have to be the same. I don't know if it's equality or just sameness. And it means that there's no, basically you have no responsibility for being who you really are. And then it gets very complicated. I've got a whole thing going on when I was in England about gender issues.
Mm-hmm.
Little boys could decide what they want to be at any time. No, we have to learn to adapt to that.
So I think one of the things with roles too is that it tells us different things about God, right? Like with Turan's example, like a wife tells us something about God. It's supposed to show us something about God that's actually different than what a husband is supposed to tell us about God. And the priests are the same way, right? And the high priest is the same way. And the lay people are the same way. Like all of these things are supposed to tell us something about God. And if we don't make these sorts of distinctions, we actually lose something about how we can see and view God, right? Because these are actually, I mean, if we take verse 6 to be, you know, the way that the Masoretic text has it, the priests are some embodiment of holiness that is actually different than the lay people, right? And so we have to, I mean, this is the reason for these regulations, right? That we're learning something about how devoted, you know, people should be to the service of God here, right? It is everything. And you don't get that with the lay people
as much.
In the same way, I should say.
Be holy, you're all a kingdom of priests.
Right.
So now you're all holy, and what does that mean?
Right.
But you don't know unless you can look at a priest, for example, perhaps they can see what a priest is, right?
Right.
Well, hopefulness of distinctions that help classify, perhaps.
Perhaps, but there's still then, in the one understanding, there's still this concept of you're all holy, you're all obliged to act a certain way. So maybe there's these like circles of holiness where the priest symbolizes the purest thing, and then all Israel symbolizes also holiness because they're a nation of priests, and then there's the rest of the world that's allowed to do a little different stuff.
Yep, for sure. So let's keep going. I think this same sort of theme is, you can see throughout. So 5 and 6, they shall not make bald patches on their heads, nor shave off the edges of their beards, nor make any cuts on their body. That shall be holy to their God and not profane the name of their God, for they offer the Lord's food offerings, the bread of their God. Therefore they shall be holy. Actually, let me go ahead and read 7 through 9 as well. They shall not marry a prostitute or a woman who has been defiled, neither shall they marry a woman divorced from her husband, for the priest is holy to his God. You shall sanctify him, for he offers the bread of your God. He shall be holy to you, for I, the Lord, who sanctifies you, am holy. And the daughter of any priest, if she profanes herself by whoring, profanes her father, she shall be burned with fire. Okay. So, any general thoughts?
It's interesting how the blood relatives is a stronger connection than married. Like, we know it's even the wife. So the daughter actually is strong, there's a stronger link to the father than the wife. Just an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any other thoughts on 5 through 9?
To be burned by fire is just a spark.
Yeah. Stoning's bad enough. It would be pretty prohibitive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing if your parents just say, like, you know, don't become a prostitute, I'll kick you out of the family. But if you know you would be burned to death, that would be that much more reason not to.
And what are the reasons for becoming a prostitute? Like, what leads them? You know, that's kind of a background, too. Either you're sold into it, you don't have a choice, or you're doing it for ritualistic reasons.
Right.
So you've left the faith of God completely, and you're doing something that's completely broken. You know. Or, I don't know, your family's not taking care of you, and so you don't have a choice.
Are there any examples in Scripture where a prostitute is burned by fire?
No. Are they normally stoned? The
adulteress.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when Judah,
that's what
he puts her out, and then he says, let it be burned.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, what? So are you why?
That was like sounded like more like vigilante.
Like community priest. Because if you're just a regular person, I don't think it says to burn.
I don't know if there are any other laws about prostitutes in general. I don't know.
That you're right. The correct ways of being a prostitute.
Well, no, just that what the penalties would be.
Yeah.
It came after, I mean, the penalties that started at the law were after Judas started anyway.
Right.
So maybe it was a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Someone in the family prostitutes, she has to
be. Well, the interesting thing, like you said, there's no real laws. The laws are all about adultery. And if you take a woman who is engaged to another, that's technically adultery.
Right.
But she's not engaged to another. You can get away with it. You just have to marry her.
Right.
Like, it's not, there's no law that would say, be stoned or burned or anything. It's kind of like...
But it's pretty clear that the penalty for adultery is stoning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if we don't think it was that often carried out, we don't know.
Right.
But I was wondering about, is it Tamar, though? And what about the...
And Joseph is why you want to get a divorce from Mary.
Who?
They weren't Joseph and Mary.
Yeah.
They weren't all the way married, but because they're engaged, to be pregnant when you're engaged is considered adultery.
Right.
To be pregnant when you're not engaged is not adultery.
So she
won't be...
But all he wanted to do was to put her away. We don't quite know.
Well, it needs to unengage her so that she doesn't have to be an adulterer.
Oh, right.
Right. So she wouldn't face the death penalty.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And this thing says profane herself. It doesn't even speak of the necessity of prostitution. It sounds like it's completely voluntary.
But this wouldn't that have made her ineligible for marriage?
Maybe, but she's not going to be... Well, uneligible for marriage by a priest, not necessarily by someone else.
But I could, if she profanes herself by playing the prostitute, she profanes her father.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're back where we started, which is that her playing the prostitute, which means whatever, I mean, even if it was just joining the local temple and we're having a temple prostitute or something, she's playing. And I mean, and it's interesting you say, because you're playing the fire. I wonder where that comes from. Just a little bit. Come on, Danny, what does it mean, playing the
fire? Well, fire in
general is dangerous. Yeah, fire in general is dangerous. So it's kind of...
It probably does come from somewhere. I'm not sure.
I never thought of it. I mean... Playing with fire means you go off and do very, very risky things, which can end in...
Well, at a circus, people juggle things that are on fire. Like that.
Well, to your original point about this priest representing holiness.
Right.
That you want to believe it. Like, even when they bring to Jesus this woman, like, hey, the Bible says she's going to be stoned. Are we going to do this, Jesus? Are we going to... Like, so there's... it's been suggested before that even then it was never done, but it was just sort of like, this is the standard, even though we don't actually stone people, this is how serious we consider this offense. And yet still you have to sort of contend with, the standard. And so, so Jesus, how do you read it? Are we going to actually go through with it? And then, of course, then, we all know Jesus is, obviously, none of us can live up to the standard, and therefore we don't, any of us, live up to the punishment either. So that being a indication that it wasn't ever implemented, perhaps, but...
Or at least not during Jesus' time.
Not during Jesus' time. But
maybe
also...
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Right? And so maybe this whole thing about, fire and this whole laying it out, showing, God saying that, listen, these are the standards, this is how serious it is, and that if you fall into breaking the standards, that, look, if essentially you corrupt your lives and your society to the degree that society falls apart and you become so unruly that you won't be able to even function as a society, and that makes you susceptible to complete destruction, both on a societal level and then also, say, even like politically. You can't maintain a military versus your enemies. You can't do anything. And so then, yeah, it will bring destruction, like real physical destruction, both as a society internally, because you can't function, and you also won't be able to function as a united unit against your enemies. So then, yeah, you will get even burned. Like, you do bring on actual, so not necessarily that, like, you have to fry each other, or that I'm going to fry you, but that the end result is that unholiness brings destruction.
However, this is a specific target here.
It is.
Yeah,
I'm stretching.
Burn out the...
Purge the evil from among you.
Evil,
is how it's translated.
Fire is a purging force. It's something purifying. It's
right.
Punishment, but it's also purifying.
Right, so all of these are very specific. Like,
mm-hmm.
This daughter, when she commits this type of offense, it is... deserving of burning my fire, like that is how serious an offense it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's not be vague about any of these things. Let me tell you very specifically, this type of offense is, that's how bad it is. That's how corrupting it is.
Yeah, and this is the case in the whole Torah, right? It's case law. This is an example of something, and this is what you should do on account of this. And obviously, there's a lot of cases that just aren't in there, right?
Like, where's the zoning?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main point is that if she does, you know, something to profane herself by whoring, she's not just profaning herself, right? She's profaning her father, right? And by doing that, again, she is making the representation of holiness among the people unholy, right? So it's not that she's just doing something wrong. She's misrepresenting God to the whole community, right? Because now, when you look at the priestly family, which is supposed to be holy in a different way, you don't see that, right? And so I think part of the, you know, message for us, and you can see this in other places as well. For example, in Amos 2, it says, a man and his father go into the same girl, right? Which is obviously, you know, terrible, and this is in Israel, right? And then it says, so that my holy name is profaned. So it's their actions, you know, it's the Israelites' actions that profane God's holiness, right? And so I think for us, and for them as well, who were supposed to be a kingdom of priests, right, we have to realize that our actions are a reflection of our God, and especially as people who have the Holy Spirit, right, who are supposed to be the temple, right, we should be different in such a way that, you know, people should be able to look at our lives and say, oh, that's holiness, right? Oh, that's what God is like, right? And that should be what they should see. And so when we don't do that, it's not just that the sin is bad, right? It's that God is being misrepresented. Mm-hmm. Right.
The idea that by doing that, they're actually misrepresenting him to the nations.
Correct.
Because it's not, you're supposed to be a light to the world, and you're...
Exactly.
I think it's like, if there's like a Christian writer or like pastor that you always really look up to, and then that guy has an affair, like it's so demoralizing, and like it really causes you to like, oh my gosh, does any of this mean anything?
And I know many examples of that where something terrible has happened, you know, and it's all on television or whatever.
But it's more than that.
And
saying that pastor could only marry a virgin, could marry a divorced woman,
right.
A widow,
right.
All kinds of categories that aren't necessarily evil. Like,
right.
if a woman's husband dies, that
right.
wasn't her problem.
Right.
It's simply that theoretically it's representing something.
It represents, I'm just saying like, that's an analogy to like a priest
mm-hmm.
having
yeah.
a bigger effect than just a normal person.
Right.
Like when someone you really look up to does something like that, it's
mm-hmm.
so much more destructive
yeah.
on
right.
on society. Like you just, it's.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting mm-hmm. though that her punishment is to be burnt and her father is constantly burning animals as part of his job.
Mm-hmm.
How could he ever make another offering without thinking of his own daughter that was burnt as well?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Verse 5, you shall not do this or that or the next thing, then means somebody was doing it.
Right, right.
So who was making bald patches on their head, shaving the edges of the beard? Well, they seem to have square beards, so I mean, they must have been cutting.
Well, the other place it says don't cut the edge of your beard like Egyptians.
Yeah.
So maybe the Egyptian priests had a certain...
Well, cut their body, the Canaanite priests were cutting
priests
themselves.
Cut their body. So, yeah, it seems like you look at the practices of all the other priests around you and say, well, don't do that, or that, or that, or that. Presumably so that you don't look like them, or to be different. Because I can't think of what is so wrong about cutting hair anywhere, except that if it's identified with certain other people.
The cutting of flesh, and I never quite know whether that's tattooing, which is...
No, they have another word for that.
Oh, is
yeah.
that?
Kakua, it mentions.
Okay, so this, that's not mentioned. So what we are talking about is the sort of slashing that some of the Shiites do when they're celebrating something. You know,
mm-hmm.
they cover themselves in blood.
I remember we talked about this also in...
Last week, right?
...for the dead.
Oh,
and
yeah.
this context, and we find it, for example...
Who did it in context?
We talked about it in the context of Leviticus 13,
mm-hmm.
and also on Leviticus 19, where it says that you shouldn't do these things, not just priests, but in general.
27 and 28.
19, 27.
Yeah.
But, so what we're saying is that the cutting of oneself is linked to the dead.
Or ritual.
Rituals linked with that, with funerals.
Only to the dead? Was it common also for people to cut themselves when they wanted their God to hear them as a sign of
right, right.
It's interesting that it often appears in death rituals.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that is a good example, by the way. It's not just the dead.
Right.
Because, so, just to review, 26, Leviticus 19, 26 and onward, you shall not eat anything with its blood, you shall not practice augury or witchcraft, you shall not round off the hair on your temples or mar the edges of your beard. You shall not make any gashes in your flesh for the dead or tattoo any marks upon you, my Lord. So,
and there, can you read the Hebrew for the gashes?
Where are you?
Verse 28 is the gashes.
The Shiva to the Nefesh, Lo, Kitnu.
Like in our past.
Shiva to the Nefesh.
Oh, you said it.
Yeah. So it's different than
the
dead.
Right.
Right.
It's the same concept.
Can you give me the
text? Is it only for priests or for the entire nation of Israel?
This is for
everyone. That's for everyone.
So you know, that's interesting.
So everyone else can't do it either.
Right. That seems to be the interesting thing here, is that why even mention it, right?
So my student David says his people group still do this. Like they cut themselves as part of a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask, I think, because we are reading the Prophets of Baal story, I don't think it's...
I've heard of it as like a, I've seen people with cuts like here for... like entrance into like manhood or some sort of like rite of passage.
Yes,
right.
That's, I think that's still pretty normal.
I've seen Chinese doing it on the way up to temples on mountaintops.
Cut themselves. Well, I think it's mentioned here again simply because if it wasn't also priests did especially.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe other people could do it too, but if it was also something kind of very ritualistic, like in emphasis needs to be placed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Maybe the issue of not shaving your beard a certain way, maybe it's also part of wholeness. you're supposed to have everything on your body the way it should grow.
Yeah.
Your body should remain whole in every aspect, even in the way that you're growing.
Here's an interesting passage in Jeremiah.
It says,
great and small alike shall die in this land. They shall not be buried. Men shall not lament them, nor gash or tonsure themselves for them.
Tonsure?
I don't know what that is. So it does hold in the Hebrew that we found in
Well, you know how in the books of Judges, everything, baldness is a sign of shame? Like to shave yourself when they had half their beard shaved was so shameful that they had to wait a month for it to grow back before they were going.
So here it is.
It was invaded.
So, that whole time here. So you kind of think of maybe balding yourself on purpose is a sign of mourning, like you're humbling yourself.
Right.
To somehow identify with this person who's died.
It's
so maybe
like
there was some type of
girls that bolded themselves and, you know, it was their sister. The sister lost her hair, so they cut their hair off.
Yeah. It's like identification somehow.
So I think we should probably keep going because we have to end, like, very soon. And we've done 9 of 40 verses. maybe... We'll just, maybe we'll skip the high priest. So the high priest is pretty much the same, except it's just a little bit stricter. So this is 10 through 15. we can do it. We just have to skip the rest of it. I'm trying to look at what... honestly, I feel like a lot of it is, like, we've talked about, it's just not the specifics. You know, so, like, the natural deformities, you know, and serving God is 16 through 24. So I think kind of the same explanation that we've said is it represents something that's not created in the way that it was originally intended to be created. Let's see. And then... 22:1-9. Your service, their service to God is excluded, or you can't serve when you are ceremonially unclean, which again, you know, makes perfect sense. One parallel I did want to bring out, and I'm not sure if you guys have talked about this, but is this whole idea about eating sacrifices. So it seems like there's a parallel between animals and people within Israel. So there's the priest, right, normally eat the sacrifices. So the sacrifices are holy in the same way that priests are holy. And then the people can eat clean things, right? And then the unclean things are outside of the people, right, that the Gentiles can eat, right? So there's this parallel between, you know, holiness of people and holiness of animals, if we can say that. So this is why the priests were the ones in particular that were supposed to eat the holy things. Let's see. Yeah. So let me just ask a kind of a general question. Does anyone have any questions or general thoughts about this passage, really quick, and then ask a couple of concluding questions?
22:9.
Yeah.
Therefore, the Kohanim shall keep my charge, so that they do not become guilty of sin and die should they profane it. And it's the first time I think we have the word sin. We've had all sorts of stuff about clean and unclean and whatever, profane and not profane. But have we had the word sin before, and is it there in Hebrew?
I think you are right that I don't remember it in the passage other than here.
But there the sin is not obeying the instructions. not the fact of being clean or unclean, not doing this.
Right.
So it's like what Moses, when Aaron's son died, he was in the process of being consecrated, and so that's even extra powerful. During that time, you can't even mourn your own father and mother or children. And so Aaron says, you better not leave. If you leave the temple and go mourn them, you could die, basically. I mean, that's the section we just skipped over. And so the sin part would be if you went ahead and did it anyway, kind of thing.
Right, and it's very good. You shall keep my charge.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, if you just do it my way,
right,
that's sin.
That's sin, right.
It's, there's a cool word, keep my charge. I mean, just because in English you could say maybe he means instruction, maybe he means this, but in Yishma, it's really this idea of like your watch, like this is your, I don't know what would be a good word, but you know, God saying, you need to keep my duty. Like, it's you are representing holiness, so like, it's a big deal.
Yeah, so one, I meant to ask this in the beginning, but I think it's a good way to end. Who's the audience here? I think this is a good question to ask of pretty much any text, is who is this intended for?
I mean, it seems like the priest.
Right.
They're the ones that have to follow these special, even more stringent rules than the rest of the people. Because the rest of the people presumably could marry a widow or these things that a priest is forbidden.
So it's education really for the whole people about, as you said, aspects or whatever of God. Interestingly enough, later, all these kings violate these thousand things and many times worse. And it's sort of like you'll be struck dead. There's some stuff in these laws that says if you break this rule, you know, like the sons of Aaron, you'll be struck dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this whole period of letting man, I guess he's saying he's letting, you know, where there's not that kind of humility and fear.
But were they priests? Are you comparing
kings?
Yeah, are you comparing priest to priest or priest to kings? Because mm-hmm. kings also have rules.
And their priests were going along with them. So
right.
It was a corrupt monarchy with corrupt priests as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
are we saying that this is written for Am Israel?
Yeah.
Or are we saying it's only written for the priests and Am Israel doesn't have to bother with it? I think you're saying, and I agree, I think, this is for Am Israel, but it's focused on the priests. So Am Israel also has the responsibility, in some way, for keeping their priests
accountable. Yeah, so.
Because you have parts that are God spoke to Moses and, you know, meant for Aaron and his sons, and the chapter afterwards he says, talk to the sons of Israel.
Yeah.
And isn't common in other cultures around that orders and for the priests were known to everyone, or was it a secret?
I don't know.
Only the priests knew how to do.
Well,
I think
there were sometimes there were secret rituals.
So
you would not read this like a lay person.
But
sometimes it's practical, like not everybody needs to know all the little ways. If they're not the ones doing it, you don't need to know.
Right.
So
yeah, well, so for the mentality, thank God I'm not a priest, you know, I think you know all this stuff and those
important
things.
But it's good for you to be aware just how tiresome and demanding a priest's job is.
Yes. Yeah, and also if you're going with the whole representational thing, you know, being an ambassador, then that's the whole point, right? It's for other people to see why you're doing certain things and then the way that everything is going.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, it's intended for the whole people because it's a reminder for them.
And here the text actually tells us, so in 21:24, it says, so Moses spoke to Aaron and to his sons and to all the people of Israel. So it's kind of a trick question. it wasn't really a trick question because it was actually in the text. But I think the point is, as you guys have said, right, is that these laws were meant to teach the people in general, right? And as was brought up earlier, this could actually be very helpful for them in general because they were a kingdom of priests, right? And they were supposed to be holy. And so in a lot of ways, they could you know, live up to their, you know, command in Exodus 19, 4 through 6, which is the kingdom of priesthood, by looking at the priest's devotion to God, the unwavering commitment, right? The fact that you had to, you couldn't even bury, you know, certain people, right? Those kinds of things. And I think a lot of this, and we'll just end with this, you can actually see a lot of allusions to this in the New Testament as well. So, you know, a man comes to Jesus. He says, you know, I need to go bury my father, right? And Jesus says, well, leave the dead to bury their dead. You just come and follow me, right? He's calling that man to actually a higher standard than the high priest. Or than the priest, right? He's calling him to be equivalent to a high priest, right? Don't even bury the dead, right? Another interesting parallel is the parable of the Good Samaritan, which again is it's a very difficult passage read in light of this whole thing, right? Because you know, a priest and a Levite, they look across the road and they say, I can't go near that dead person, because they're thinking of Leviticus 21 and 22, right? Which makes perfect sense. Right. I think the text says that, you know, they left him half dead. So I think it was, right. So it's very unclear. Exactly.
And the question is, though, were they in service or not? Because
they
were not on
the
way to
the temple. Right. Well, it's
not your family.
Correct. Correct.
Family.
Correct. Well, I'm just saying that I think part of what Jesus is doing in the New Testament, and I think you can see it other places in Paul as well, is that you know, we are, in a lot of ways, you know, the bar is raised, right? That we are this kingdom of priests, right? And we are supposed to be holy in some respects, like the priests. Right, our devotion, I mean, especially with the man who comes and wants to bury his father, you know, our devotion to Christ is, you know, parallel to the priest's devotion, you know, to God, right? And nothing really, not even family, should stand before, you know, our devotion to him. So
it implicitly, he redefines holiness in that passage, because it's not the one for the priest that's more important, it's the one that cares for the other that's more important.
Exactly. Obviously, there's a lot of interesting things about the parable of the Good Samaritan. But right, so he's actually making holiness not as much ceremonial, but more moral, right? In the sense of, you know, this is, holiness was meant to teach you something about God and about how to behave towards humans. It was about how to be human, right? And this is, it's first and foremost, love. Exactly.
Because when he heals lepers, he says, go show yourself to the priest. So he's affirming
right.
that there's a certain thing you do for holding it, for clean and unclean. But I would just, you remind me, when he's calling the disciples, it says that he's consecrating them to priesthood there. And then that parallels exactly these laws here and Aaron and his sons, that during the time of consecration, not only do you have the regular priestly standards, but it's even worse. If your father dies during that time, you can't go mourn them. Like,
yeah.
It's a time consecration that you have to be holy, holy, holy.
Yeah.
Right then. So when he says don't go to bury your father, he's basically saying you're now in a consecration time to be my disciples, like becoming this, like you said, like the high priest.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Do all of you guys who come to live here in Jerusalem, despite your family's unhappiness, are being very holy?
All right. Let me pray real quick. Father, we just we thank you for today, for another morning, for another opportunity to open your word and learn about you. God, there are so many people today who will even die who have never heard your word. God, I just ask that we would remember that we are to be a kingdom of priests, to this world, that we are to be holy and represent you. God, help us to do this. Help us to spread your kingdom to the far corners of the world so that everyone would know what it means to be human, what it means to be holy, and who you are. God, we just thank you again for all that you've done, all that you are doing, and please be with us during the service. In your son's name, amen.
Thank you.